Tom Baker, back on the radio again today, was on a little earlier with Paul Clayton on Ask the Pastor. In fact, we're going to continue a little bit of the conversation, of which we did not have enough time to finish, but today is Friday, August the 5th, which means it's Open Mic Friday. What does that mean? Usually I come in with a topic, and I like to stick with the topic, but on Open Mic Fridays, you can talk about anything that you want, of course, of a theological nature. Now, more things are theological than you might think, but there are a lot of things that there are no really theological answers about, especially if you're getting into government kinds of events, because God does not have very much advice for specifics within the government. That's why you can have an Old Testament government that stones adulterers, and our New Testament government in the United States, we don't do that. And both are the will of God, because God is in charge all the time. So, if you have any questions, how do you get a hold of me? In the St. Louis area, the number is 505-7850. That's 505-7850. And in anywhere in North America, it's 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. One of the questions that came up during the Ask the Pastor, and we had a number of subjects on Ezra, the gay marriage, why we don't have bishops, which we do, but not in the sense some used it, on the American Constitution, on baptism, and then I believe it was Brian who called during the last moments we had, and he was asking a question about the distinction between vision and dream. So I did a little homework on that. Guess how many times the word dream occurs in the New King James Version? 59 times. And how many times does the word vision appear? None. What? But I think I remember Bible verses that had the word vision in it. Well, remember, I'm talking about translations now. And so we're talking about the New King James. That's right. The word vision appears hardly ever. Whereas, I'm sorry, I think I got those two mixed up. If you go to the King James Version, there you have quite a difference in the number of times that vision shows up. In fact, in the King James Version, the word vision appears 73 times, and the word dream, how many times do you think it appears? It appears 67 times. The fact of the matter is, those are different Hebrew and Greek words. So, when you're taking a look, therefore, you need to understand that a dream is really a dream, and a vision is really a vision. You can be conscious, in the sense awake, for a vision. You cannot be for a dream. Now, I believe the question was, how do we not know that the little boy wasn't dreaming these things that God was sending to him in a vision? That appeared to be the question. Well, the fact of the matter is we are not to add or subtract from God's holy word. So when I stand in a pulpit and I don't have, in my opinion, in front of a sentence, you are listening as though God himself were speaking. Well, what I mean by that is, what a really good sermon does, it simply repeats back to the person what God has originally said. Now, it doesn't mean we can't paraphrase, but we need to be careful there, because some paraphrases go so far away from the scripture. There's an entire paraphrase where all the masculine pronouns are changed to neuter, where I don't know, the editors have such a hard time in thinking of God as a he. That even is mocked on television. Last night, what was I looking at? I think it was the O'Reilly Factor or one of those programs. And, oh yeah, there was a poll out. Yeah, this was really interesting. How good a job do you think God is doing? I believe it was around 40% or 52% thought God was doing a pretty good job. 12% thought he wasn't doing well. But then there was like 40% who weren't sure. Who are these people? You see, from a biblical point of view, God's job is always a number one. He's always batting 1,000. There's no doubt. On a scale of 1 to 10, he's always a 10. How can you say that? Because God never sins. And all that he does is for the good of his people. There never is a time that one can say that God made a mistake. Presidents, governors, mayors, councilmen, they make mistakes. Oh, yes. Pastors, presidents of church bodies, elders in the church, they make mistakes. But God never makes a mistake. Now, the reason some people don't think God is doing a very good job rating is because they either don't know the Bible or they certainly don't know God. And the latter seems to be more true. Remember now, open mic Friday. And if you listen to this morning's program with Paul Clayton, then you might be able to phone on something there that we didn't finish one of those subjects. But at this point, the numbers are 505-7850 or toll-free 1-800-730-2727. Let's go speak with Joe. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Been hearing a lot lately about fair, whatever, people paying their fair share or that. And I was...
Well, you should at church, don't you think? Offerings to God?
Do what?
At church, you should pay your fair share.
Well, that's what... just wondering how that stacks up in the Bible. Just if that term... Is that concept where... In the Bible, I know there's justice everywhere, and just biblically, when you say the word justice, what that means, like it seems like that's a system that everyone's under. Where fairness, when people say that, is they have a system in mind that they want to impose on everybody else, but they don't want it to apply to them.
Oh, are you speaking about some people talking about that in the government taxes, everybody should pay their fair share?
I think it ties into the whole idea of social justice and everything else. And I guess the where I'm heading with this is it seems that's a false premise to start out with, that fairness is such a subjective idea or concept. Like, what is the standard of measure if we start talking about fair? It just seems like as Christians we shouldn't even entertain the idea that somehow someone can make life fair. The way it's used today.
Would you like to hear my opinion on this one?
Yes, I would. That's absolutely what I'm kind of wrestling with it, trying to figure out how much does God have to say about
the whole fair share.
A lot,
okay, are you ready? You
yeah.
ready?
Okay.
The Bible has absolutely nothing to say about it.
About which? The fair?
Yeah, about this whole concept of giving fair share.
Right.
Like, if you're a Christian, here's the Christian point of view. If you're a Democrat and you agree with Obama, then push that kind of fairness he's talking about. If you're a Republican and don't like what he's talking about, then push that kind. But to say that God has an idea of fair share that, for example, I'll tell you, and this is personal experience, I used to have employees. I no longer have employees because it just costs too much. The business I'm in, I don't make that much of a profit.
Yeah.
Because, it's theological books and these kinds of things. But I had to get rid of four employees because the government restrictions were too much, and whoever was up there thought I wasn't giving my fair share of taxes. Okay, I'm now giving my fair share of taxes, but there's four people who don't have jobs.
Right.
Now, on the other hand, my fair share of taxes, some people will say, well, that's good because now those four people at least can be taken care of with welfare and things like that. There isn't a clear answer here as what is fair share. I know some pretty wealthy people, and I'll tell you, the more money that they can put to use rather than the government, that may be a lot better. But some rich people don't put their money to better use than the government, so the government should take more. We are in an area where God has given no revelation, so if you hear a sermon or a pastor talking about fair share, this is not Lutheran theology. This could be evangelical theology or charismatic theology, but it's not Lutheran because there's nowhere in God's holy word that gives a principle or anything that would deal with this question.
I think what it's more silence coming from leadership in the Christian culture that I'm more aware of, that as Christians we should know better than to have any kind of political discussion framed in the structure of fairness.
Well, Joe, you just said a word, political structure. One's political structure is another's religious thought. The problem here is the Christian should be very much involved in politics where God's word has clearly spoken or where his conscience is coming down in a certain area. So if you're a businessman who feels you would like to give more taxes, then that's what you should be pushing. But if you're a businessman who feels you can do better with the money than the government can, that's what you should be pushing. And no pastor or Christian ought to stand up and say, oh boy, you're wrong or you're right, because you don't have a clear word in these areas.
But let me give you a couple of things that I think Christians should be able to discern. Just the idea of, in Ecclesiastes, God says if someone has wealth and the ability to enjoy it, this is a gift from God. And then also with Ananias and Sapphira, Peter clearly told them that while that was yours, you could have done whatever you wanted with it. And I'm not saying that, you know, you can refute everything, but just to discern that there are, property is something that is a gift from God. And then just also the concept in the early church where everybody brought everything and laid it at the apostles' feet and shared in common, that's, you know, each according to his need, each according to his ability, that's communism. But
not really. You have to understand. Because people think you're saying they're communists. Let me correct that. In that day, the Jews who had needs were taken care of by the Jewish religion, and the Romans were definitely taken care of by Rome. But the Christians, being part of neither group, were left alone, and that's why Paul even got a contribution for food for the people in Jerusalem who really didn't have any backup to help them through their problems.
But my point was is that those people were doing it because they want to. They didn't have anyone making them do it.
I don't have a problem with the government making you do something if they think it's in the greater good. Well, where does God say the government can't do that?
He doesn't. I'm just saying that without the change in motivation, a lot of things that are very good in God's kingdom, where the benevolence and the grace and the mercy are very productive in a society, that when it becomes law and it becomes mandated, and I think historically you can see that the concept of communism didn't work out very well.
Here's where we're having the problem. You're talking in generalities, and I often refuse to do that. Got to talk in specific. Like you talked about motivation. If a small town puts up a speed limit because they don't want accidents to occur, that's one motivation. But if they put one up because they want to, you know, have a speed trap as people go through, that's another motivation. The fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter what their motivation is. It now becomes God's law, and you better follow the speed limit.
Yeah, well, I thought that the passage in Acts was pretty specific, and I was just trying to make the point that when the two kingdoms get flip-flopped, that it seems like it really doesn't result in that much good for a society, and that Christians, not that we should rebel against it, but we should at least be able to discern it.
Give me an example of the two kingdoms being flip-flopped so I can understand you a little bit better.
Well, I guess that is my example, that the early church, the same principles that they used where everything was brought and then dispensed in common, each according to his need, had a very good result there.
But we live that way today.
And if you take it to the extreme where it's completely through government where there is no God, then I guess that's my point, is that I think as government begins to do all the work of redistribution, that it ends up being harmful to a society.
It wasn't harmful when the Romans did it.
I don't know.
I mean, people just loved the roads they built. I mean, it was just really wonderful living under the early Roman Empire.
To a limit, I'd agree with
right.
that. I just think that there's a point where if there is no concept of God anymore in a society and all these principles continue to be, it just deteriorates to where there's no common good anymore. But, again, I guess that's the point I was trying to get at is your opinion, I guess.
Yeah, like Sodom and Gomorrah, they were having a wonderful time. All the consequences of sin were taken away. I mean, that was the worst wrath God could put upon them. I really hesitate to buy into the idea that you can look at the consequences of what's happening in a country because they believe or don't believe in God and therefore make some kind of statement. Because, you know, what was it I was told that this... Yeah, on the Discovery Channel, Stephen Hawking is going to have a whole hour on did God create the universe. Now, you and I both know he's going to say no to that, and he's going to be utterly justified in his own mind, and our arguments aren't going to have hardly any movement in him away from that point of view.
No, I wouldn't be referring to unbelievers trying to persuade them at all. I was just I guess, you know, it seems that the Christian culture in this country is not discerning things, and maybe I'm the one that's wrong. I just think that there's clarity on some of these principles that if someone is a Christian, then these principles can have a benefit to a society. But as unbelievers, it's something that is not really bringing about benefits. It's
doing yeah, well. Outside the clear will of God, what other principles are there?
You don't, outside the clear will of God?
From the Bible, right.
Are you talking
right.
about in the human, no, okay, in the Bible?
Yeah, I mean, what other principles are we supposed, in your mind, do you think we should be following?
None. I'm saying that I don't think it's being discerned that well in the Christian culture of this country. The principles, the way God sees these things, that's my opinion, is that being discerned that well, that we're buying into a social justice and all this other ideas that sound good on the surface, but when you're trying to apply that through government to everyone, you don't have the proper motivation like the church does, and it actually doesn't bring about good. It brings about bad, like irresponsibility and other things that really aren't good for a society. That's what I'm trying to communicate, that I think that the church has a lot more available to us about how God sees these things and what we're able to discern right now.
Yeah, like I say, I don't operate on the basis of generalities, and until I hear specifics, I really haven't any idea what you're talking about. You know, I don't want to be mean or anything,
right.
But
no, that's fine.
I have no idea what you're saying.
Well, you don't think that I guess maybe you don't think it's a problem with the whole concept of welfare and all the rest of it being handled through the government versus through the church.
Let me simply ask you this. Is it a sin for the government to do it?
No.
Then it's not a problem.
Okay.
If it's not a sin, then it's permitted. And then the society decides the way they want to go.
But I mean, I guess you're comfortable too, like, you don't think as Christians it would be official to say this probably isn't going to work out well? Like, you don't think we can discern that this probably isn't going to end well for everybody if we allow government to do all these things?
Well, they're not doing all these things, and some of the things they are doing is working out well. In
like
other
what?
Areas,
besides roads and military, what do you think has worked out well?
Well, I had a congregation that had quite a few people on welfare, and
uh-huh.
I knew those people well. They were trying to find jobs, and it was just really difficult,
and
welfare really helped them out, so I didn't have any problem with that at all.
Were they believers?
Oh, they were members of my congregation.
Yeah. That would probably be a difference as far as the motivation.
Well, there were a lot of people coming to Avalon Instruction that weren't believers, and I didn't have any problem with them getting welfare either. I mean,
okay.
if somebody... In fact, St. James would do welfare by giving turkeys and food to people who
were
hungry.
No, now you're into the other kink. Now you'd have the church do it. That's my whole point.
No, the church never did it.
St. James is the church,
no,
right?
No, it's not. No,
okay.
We did that as citizens.
Okay.
It's just like Lutheran Hospital was not the church at work there. It was a bunch of Lutherans, and many of them weren't even Lutherans. You know, helping people out is an area of the temporal realm, not of the church. Now, just because church members get involved, they're doing so as citizens, not as members. It's not the goal of the church to build homes for the homeless and feed
loving
the hungry.
Your neighbor. Doesn't have nothing to do with that.
No, that's as a citizen. That's the law area. It's not the gospel. The church has to deal with word and sacrament to bring people into a right relationship with God. And outside of some food we gave and helping people learn the English language, which we did not consider part of the church at work, St. James really didn't participate in any of those things because our members were doing it through other organizations. Like the United Fund.
Like through their public school education or where?
United Fund would be a good example. We had some leaders in the United Fund, and, boy, they really provide funding for
right,
people
but
in need.
Where did they learn these principles that they were applying? Like, did they learn it in the public school, or did they have to come to church to hear this stuff?
This was civil stuff? It didn't have anything
know.
To do
I mean,
with
that's
religion.
What, it just seems like I don't know how you can. I don't understand how you can say that this doesn't it isn't a product of the church.
Because it's not. The product of the church is the word and sacrament ministry. The product of the church is not social ministry. That can be the product of Christians as citizens.
Right.
But that's not the church at work.
I guess that's where I'm kind of. I'm not following you like.
Well,
but anyway, I'll keep listening. That's
you,
what
you think about
like when you're in church, you're understanding better about how God designed us to live together, and it seems like that starts to show up on the outside in the things that you do as a citizen.
Right,
like
you're
but you're more informed, you understand better, and you discern better. Like what is wisdom as far as God's design for life, and what's not.
Yes, but it's got to be said in such a way so that the Democrat in your church can remain a Democrat and the Republican can remain a Republican.
Right, but yeah, I don't know that's important.
Huh?
I'm not. I guess it's more the point that I just think Christians have a lot more available to us than what's being implemented. As far as just understand, I'm not saying that you're going to change the parties or anything else. It's just...
Yeah, well, like I say, think of it a little more and definitely have some specifics to work with. Because in a number of areas, I'm going to agree with you. And perhaps in other areas, I won't, depending on what you're going to say. Pastor's got to be really careful when it gets into purely political items, and, you know, we're going to be back after the break to talk to Marilyn.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson. The psalmist once wrote, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for He is good, for His mercy endures forever." Indeed. in Jesus Christ, you get a mercy that never stops coming to you through His holy word and sacraments. Join me this Sunday for God's Mercy in musical form. It's all about a never-ending mercy. That's Jubilation Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. right here on listener-supported KFUO Radio.
This is John Fuller for Focus on the Family. Coming up this weekend, improving financial communication in your marriage. Do you know your money personality? How to get inactive kids to exercise more this summer. And encouragement for single moms. All that and more on the next Weekend Magazine.
Saturday mornings at 10 on KFUO Radio.
This is John Fuller with Focus on the Family Minute. Oftentimes, the overwhelming scale of creation and the world around us begs the question, what part do I play in all of this? Here's author and speaker Ken Davis with a little reminder.
I didn't know at that time, or did not believe at that time, that the creator of the universe, before the foundation of the earth was laid, had my picture on his wall, as he had yours. I was not some cosmic accident. Not some accidental piece of algae. But I was created with purpose and meaning. I didn't understand that in His eyes I was unique. And that He had a purpose. And that I could live with meaning, the kind that lasts forever.
The most powerful demonstration of God's love was Jesus Himself, sent from heaven to live among mankind. Find more examples of God's love at focusonthefamily.com/radio.
You didn't see any other option. You were scared. It seemed right, for whatever reason, the choice to abort your child. Well, that was then, and this is now. Hi, I'm Phyllis Wallace. Georgette Forney made that choice at 16. She now directs the National Silent No More Awareness Campaign to address the unspoken pain of abortion. Hear her on Hope and Healing After the Choice, next time, Woman to Woman.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on KFUO Radio.
The Alzheimer's Association St. Louis Chapter will hold its annual Walk to End Alzheimer's at various locations around the metro area soon. There's a walk at Washington, Missouri on September 10th at the Washington City Pavilion. The St. Louis Walk will be held at Busch Stadium on September 17th. And the Walk to End Alzheimer's scheduled at SIU Edwardsville is set for September 24th. Registration information is available online at www.alzstl.org.
Tom Baker back here on Law and Gospel on this Open Mic Friday, 505-7850. And anywhere in North America, 1-800-730-2727. Let's go speak with Marilyn. Hi, Marilyn.
It was a really interesting program a couple of days ago about Jesus in Gethsemane. I recorded it and sent it. Recorded it on the computer and sent it, the tape, to my daughter.
Oh.
But I just wanted to say, to me, it wouldn't be a sin for Jesus to think that, because He knew exactly what was going to happen. And as a human like me, He was just praying, I don't think I can do this. That's the way I look at it.
Yes, what Marilyn's talking about is Jesus' command to His Father to remove the cup. And if you think that He's saying remove the crucifixion, see, here's my problem with that interpretation, Marilyn, is that Peter wanted to remove the crucifixion.
Yeah.
And he was just acting like a human being, but he was weak in faith because Jesus said, "Get thee behind me, Satan." I can't think of another instance in the Bible where somebody has that kind of a weakness that isn't sin.
Yeah, well, I don't think it was a sin for Peter either. It was Satan at work.
Oh, no. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Marilyn, if Satan tempts you to do something, That's sin.
Well, he was bothering them all.
Well,
he
of
was
course.
Satan was bothering Jesus so much.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was. I think he took advantage of his weakness and was tormenting him besides worrying about what he had to do.
I remember the wilderness. You know, where was Jesus having a problem there? He just told Satan off by giving the verses from Deuteronomy.
Yeah. Well, it was really a good answer you had. I liked it. But
yes.
I always did feel like I told you, and I still can't part with that idea. But I think you really came to a good conclusion that he didn't want to die right then and there.
That's right,
and ruin the whole thing.
Yeah, that would have really caused the problem. You know, you have very good company with your opinion. One of the great church fathers, Ambrose, he speaks the same way you did. This was his human nature coming through. But as I say, that shows a weakness. How many other times did Jesus speak that you wonder now, was that his human nature speaking and not real truth?
Oh.
See, that's what would bother me then, is if there was a time that Jesus really was so human that he wanted to go against the will of the Father. Boy, that concerns me.
Yeah. Well, it was really good. I
yes.
listened to the whole thing waiting for an answer, and it was good.
Okay.
But when I told my other daughter this morning, she feels more like I do. And that's a whole new idea you came up with.
Well, that's why you listen to listener support of KFUO Radio Maryland, and we love you as our supporter.
Well, thank you very much.
God bless. Thank you so much. Anybody else can call at 505-7850 or toll-free 1-800-730-2727. In case you weren't listening this morning and in case you didn't hear the conversation that Mark Smith and I had on Tuesday, let me just summarize it. The question was, why would Jesus ask the Father to remove the cup of dying on the cross from him just after a little while he had told Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan," for doing basically the same thing, trying to stand in the way of the crucifixion? Now, it's interesting that some of the church fathers do talk about the weakness of Jesus in the flesh, but it's one thing to be weak. It's quite another thing not to trust. And therefore, Jesus was praying to the Father, this was my answer, to make sure that nothing stood in the way of the cup he was to drink according to the Old Testament. And that cup of death was not to occur in the Garden of Gethsemane. Remember, as soon as he walked into the garden, he said, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death." And he asked the disciples, "Please stay with me, stay awake." And they all fell asleep. Jesus was getting no comfort from his closest friends. And he was really sweating as of drops of blood, it says. So when he asked to remove the cup, I don't believe that it's talking about the cup of the crucifixion. It's talking about the cup of death that he was almost going to experience in the Garden of Gethsemane. Just as he, I'm sure, prayed the Father to have removed the temptations in the wilderness, had Jesus fallen into any of those temptations, you and I'd be going to hell because he would have sinned. Had Jesus died in the Garden of Gethsemane instead of at Mount Calvary, then you and I'd be going to hell because it would not have fulfilled the Scriptures. Psalm 22, pierced in hands and feet. Isaiah 53, whipped for our sakes. There are many, many passages in the Bible, Old Testament, that point forward to the manner of death as well as how it would happen. And remember, cursed is he who hangs. Well, if he had just died in the Garden of Gethsemane, he wouldn't have been hanging either. So he prayed for the Father to remove the cup of suffering and death he was facing in the garden. Now, why was he facing in the garden? Because he knew what was about to happen. His worry was not really about the pain and suffering of the cross physically, but the fact that the Father would desert him, which he did. My God, why have you forsaken me? And the answer the Bible gives is Jesus had become sin for you and me. As he hung on that cross, he was the greatest sinner in the world, because he carried my sins, your sins, he carried the sins of the world. When he died, and he said those words, "It is finished," when God the Father rose him from the dead, he was basically saying, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am very well pleased," because he fulfilled the work for which he had come to do, which was to become your substitute in taking upon himself the death you and I should have had. That's why Jesus is your Savior. Jesus is your Lord. Can you understand in that context how talking about Jesus as example, boy, that just falls so short of what we're really trying to talk about here. So, be that as it may, it's kind of interesting that we have a situation in the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus was not at all rebelling against the will of his Father. He was actually asking the Father to help him fulfill it by not dying in that garden, that that cup of death would be removed. Now, I have to say there are church fathers who think it's his human side, but I've never really quite come to grips. I've never had anybody adequately explain how Jesus could be doing what Peter had basically done, namely getting in the way of the necessary death and resurrection on Calvary and at the tomb, and not be doing the work of Satan, as he accused Peter of. So that's all I was saying there. And I thank Marlene for bringing that up again. If any of you have any other questions, don't hesitate to call 505-7850 or toll free 1-800-730-2727. Received a really neat email that I'd like to share with you. It's the use of a cell phone. Do you realize how many people, they just love their cell phones? If they're not talking on them all the time, they could be writing to others all the time. So I was sent this, entitled, "What If?" Ever wonder what would happen if we treated our Bible like we treat our cell phone? Who was I talking to recently? And we couldn't remember where a Bible verse was, and he was looking all over for a Bible. And then he suddenly remembered, as I do, he also had a Bible on his cell phone. Yeah, in fact, I've got all kinds of things on my cell phone. And so we both looked it up. We had a little race who would get to it first. But isn't that interesting that we hardly think of the Bible on our cell phone because we use it so rarely? What if we carried it around in our purses or pockets? You know, just like we do the cell phone, so also the Bible. What if we flipped through the Bible several times a day? What if we returned back home to get the Bible if we forgot it? You know, that's really close to home, because I'll tell you, I have forgotten my phone at home every now and then, and if I'm within one or two blocks, I will turn around to get it. Because I know the first thing I'm going to have to do is find a real phone to phone my wife to tell her I left my phone at home and don't try to phone me because you can't get through to me. What if we used it to receive messages from the text? Now, that's talking about texting and messaging to other people. But how about if every time we open it up, and it'd be really easy to make a little program like that where a Bible verse popped up each time we opened it? What if we treated the Bible like our cell phone, like we couldn't live without it? What if we gave it to our children as gifts? Now, I did follow the practice of my parents, who gave us Thompson Chain Reference Bibles at our confirmation. and I did also with my children. The Thompson Chain Reference Bible, if you haven't seen one of them, boy, it is really a monster of a work. It's just wonderful. It has, of course, the regular Bible with all kinds of little notes throughout it. But at the end, it's got many, many helps in regard to the Bible. It's got a whole set of maps. It's got a chronology of the Old Testament passages that are pointing forward to the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. It's kind of like a prophecy thing. It's got alphabetical words where you can look up to get a little bit more input as to what that word means. It just has many, many, many exercises to follow, items to do, and is really a good resource. Thompson Chain Reference Bible. In my day, when I was growing up, they only had them in the New King James. And I know they have them in other translations now. But what if we gave the Bible to our kids as gifts? What if we use the Bible when we travel, like we use the cell phone? What if we use it in case of emergency? You know, oftentimes the pastor is there for an emergency. But oftentimes, if I get to somebody's house and they're all sitting on the couch, you know, I may point to the Bible that's on a side table, and after we kind of knock the dust off of it, we begin to go through that. The resource is there. People just simply don't really understand it. Using the Bible in case of an emergency. And I don't mean that you're bringing furniture in from the outside, so use the Bible to prop open the door. That's not the emergency we're talking about. Oh, and one more thing. Unlike our cell phone, we don't have to worry about our Bible being disconnected because Jesus already paid the bill. Makes you stop and think, where are my priorities? And by the way, there are no such thing as dropped calls. That's really good. I want to thank Frank for sending that to me. By the way, if you'd like a copy of this, don't hesitate to get a hold of me. I'll send you a free one, email. And we're also sending out free copies of the newspaper article Peter Kurowski wrote about Jesus' view on gay marriage. If you're all interested, email me at lawgospel@lawgospel.com. And then I'm going to just return it right to you with your own email. And if you don't have email or a computer, you can phone us long distance. And that's at 1-877-CMS. That's for Concordia Mission Society. 1962. 1-877-CMS-1962. Leave your name, phone number, address as to where you want it sent, and we'll send one or both of these. The one just referred to as the cell phone article, and the other one we'll just refer to as gay marriage. Be glad to send them to you. If you have, by the way, any suggestions for topics, for example, the one I did on Wednesday about heaven is for real, definitely came out of a lot of suggestions of our listeners and email writers. Could you maybe put together something? By the way, I'll be doing some writing on that. I've already received from folks asking me for that. So one of my blogs is going to do that. I will tell you when that's up and running, so you can go and get that at no cost. And that'll also be off the computer. Look at all the good things we at KFUO Radio do for you here. And we're only too happy to do it because we want to get the word out. The other item, I will be at our store in St. Louis. So if you're in the St. Louis area, you'd like to come see the products that we have. And we sell more than just books from the website. We sell clothes and furniture and utensils and dishes and all kinds of things. And at really reduce prices in order to help out those who have need of them. The address is 2126 Woodson Road. That's in Overland, Missouri. It's easy to get to. Highway 170, then west on Page, about a mile, right on Woodson over to 2126. No problem at all. And by the way, if you say that you listen to the show, we have a free gift for you tomorrow. I will, most certainly, I'm trying to be there between 9 and noon. Sometimes I'm there a lot longer. I try and bring some work to do in case somebody isn't in the store. But that's what we're here for, to help you out. And unfortunately, there'll be some people like those in Atlanta who won't be able to make it. Is that right, Jan? Jan, are you on the air? Oh, I thought we had Jan here. Okay. Let me try it once more. Jan?
Hello, Pastor. How are you?
Very good. How can I help you?
Well, I was listening to you earlier, and you were talking to one of the callers, and you were saying that the Bible was silent on fairness. And I'm looking at...
No. He was asking about taxes. Everybody gives their fair taxes, and that's what I was saying the Bible is silent on.
Okay. Well,
not fairness. We ought to be fair, but the Democrats' view of being fair is quite different than the Republicans' view, and God doesn't come down on either side.
Well, what do you think about Amos 8:5 and Romans 13:7?
Oh, I love them. I think they're really good. What do you mean, what do I think of them?
Well, do you think they have anything to say about the...
What's the Romans one? Romans 13 what?
Romans 13, 7.
Oh, yeah, that's with the government. Render, therefore, to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute, custom to whom custom. And in fact, I think in the King James, it's taxes to whom taxes. Absolutely. And remember, that was talking about Romans.
Right, yeah.
Now, these guys weren't even Christians.
Yeah. When earlier in the chapter, Romans 13 makes it clear that no government exists unless God establishes it.
Well, even more than that, look at the previous verse where it says, he's God's minister attending continually to this very thing. So once our representatives decide what our taxes are, that now becomes the will of God.
Mm-hmm. So then it's incumbent on the voters to pick responsible people.
Oh, my, yes, because we have a representative government.
Right. So when we have elections, it's not necessarily what, why would I vote my conscience, because it's evil. Continually, I need to seek God's face about what the public good is. And one last passage.
Yes.
2 Corinthians 8, verses 12 through 15.
Okay. And 2 Corinthians 8, 12 to 15, and what's the point you want to make on that one? It says, first, if there is a willing mind, is it accepted according to what one has and not according to what he does not have? Is that
right.
The one you're talking about?
Yeah, and I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened. So when one has bounty or prosperity, it should be allocated to the society that gifted them with that.
I don't see anywhere here where it talks about allocated to the society, as though, if you're talking about the government, it means to distribute also to those who have need. And I know some very wealthy people who do far better with their money than the government does in helping out the needy. I know where their money goes, and it's just wonderful. The government would never send it to some of these places like pro-life groups and things like that, whereas there's other very, very, very wealthy people where the government would do better than they do in helping out the poor.
So do you think it's reasonable to suggests that the source or the recipient of those resources should be objectively evaluated.
God does do that. It's impossible for me to do so. I don't know their heart. I don't know their other... unless you know everything about their money. You know, they may lay off a bunch of people at one thing in order to maybe get into an area where they can hire a lot more people. I just don't get involved in the businesses of the people in my congregation because I'm not an expert in that area, and God, I'm not God.
No, we all have imperfect knowledge. And I think that's when we actually have the best opportunity to gain knowledge. What does it say in James? If anyone lacks wisdom, ask it of God. And that brings another question to me. In the King James Version, it said, if anyone lacks wisdom, ask it of God, and he gives liberally and without reproach. Subsequent translations have taken that out of the...
Now, what verse is that specifically?
James 1:5.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was still looking at 2 Corinthians 8. Oh, okay. Yeah, James 1:5, and you're saying that there's quite a difference in the King James versus the others. Yeah, the King James says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach. That's also what the New King James says, but the ESV says, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach.
And I have a problem with that because...
Oh, yeah.
It's generous to give a newborn a baseball mitt.
Yes.
But liberal... To my mind, and the connotation obviously has changed, but it means a realistic assessment of whether or not that gift will be adequately and appropriately used. It doesn't mean just like throw money at a problem.
No, in fact, the original Greek is it's haplos, and it means to give sincerely. To give simply, frankly, and openly. It's actually an adverb there, and that's its real meanings there.
Okay, and I remember the caller seemed to suggest earlier that the left and right hand kingdoms become crossed or
yes, they
twisted.
Often get confused. That's correct.
But I don't think that's what's happening. I think that the left-hand kingdom is being elevated by some people over the right-hand kingdom. And then when they get in trouble, they say, oh, this is the right-hand kingdom thing.
Oh, that's good insight. Yes. In fact, you should write an article about that. No, really, and give actual examples, because people do appreciate hearing things put into perspective, and you've got that gift, Jan.
Well, thank you, Pastor.
Well, thank you
and
so much.
And congratulations on your PhD. I saw that on the homepage.
PhD?
Dr. Baker?
Well, yeah, but...
thank you.
I've had a doctor for some time. It's not new or anything. All right, God bless. We'll catch you later. And we hope that you have a wonderful weekend. And until Monday, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekdays at 3 p.m. on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.